I'm Cape.
And I'm Drew.
We're just two former student athletes who understand the game.
Not just on the court.
But in life.
At the end of the day, we just want to help.
Today's athletes and former just trying to find their way.
It's bigger than sports.
This is the Cape and Drew podcast. The real TikTok. What's up, my man? I'm Cape.
I'm Drew.
Yo, we back. Episode 25. Today's show. Do you need a healing? And first off, we gotta talk about the first time we heard this quote was in Antoine Fisher, the movie Antoine Fisher, when he was going in to see Denzel, and he goes in because he's got all the everybody's seen it knows, but he's got having all these issues, and he's mocking Denzel because he doesn't feel like he's spent or is going to spend the appropriate amount of time with him to help fix his issues, his problems. So he's going in there mocking him, and he's hitting people on the forehead saying, do you need a healer?
He's finally on that brink of, yo, I finally found somebody I could open up to, and now you're going to tell me it's only 3 sessions?
Yes, dog. And so with that being said, we watched a show. I'm not a huge fan of this show. I guess I hadn't been in tune to it, but we watched a show. What's the name of the show, Drew?
It's called, I'm trying to look at it now. Yeah. I know, and Marcellus Wiley's on there, and I just always been a fan of his.
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking truth, man, stuff you can relate to. So I think it's called, Speak for Yourself or something like that.
Yeah, Speak for Yourself with Whitlock and Wiley. And it was a great segment of the show, and I think I sent it to you via Instagram, and they were just talking about the whole emasculated victim mentality of today's athletes, specifically Black athletes, Black male athletes. And they had the question of, is it helping or helping athletes? And so for everybody out there, what emasculated victim mentality is basically, and there's this long definition for it, but it's basically blaming everybody for your problems. And what they were talking about on the show, a big example that they were using was, or it was Adrian, or what's my name? AB?
Brown.
Yep. And his whole thing that we all know about, we talked about it on this show before. And so what were your initial thoughts from the video?
Man, it really took me back to like my younger years, as far as like, you know, middle school, high school, when you would do something, but either hindsight, you were either so good that you could get away with it, and then, or you were so good that even if you were kind of like held accountable, you would blame others. Like, well, y'all ain't do that for me. Y'all ain't make it so I wouldn't do that. And you start to realize as you get older that those chances or those opportunities, that does not equate to you can just do whatever you want.
Yeah. And I the first thing I thought about was, when they were talking about it, I was like, man, you think about, especially like NFL guys, since they were talking about AB, how the common denominator with most Black male athletes that make it to the NFL, let's just say NFL, for example, is that they come from single parent households. It was just mom, grandma, you know, and they didn't have a father figure. And so they used all of that to help get them to where they are, right? Because they use that as fuel. And, you know, along the way, they just kind of playing their sport. Nobody's really, as long as they're talented, you know how it go in high school. If you're talented, ain't nobody checking you for real. Or even middle school, right? Really. And then you get to college, it's kind of the same thing because the coaches want you to help them win games. So they're not really checking in with you as a human being. And they actually say that on the show. Like, they're not developing you as a human being. They want you to be the best athlete. These athletes that have been doing this for 20 years now get to the NFL or NBA, and they never developed as a person. Mm-hmm. They're a hell of an athlete, but then they wonder why you have an AB situation or any kind of situation off or on the field or on the court. It's because there's no like emotional intelligence that was ever developed.
Mm-hmm. I think too, man, you know, you look back, there's just a reference of that movie Rebound. We're talking about Earl Manigault, the story of Earl Manigault. And he's flipping out with towards Forrest Whitaker. Forrest Whitaker is the janitor at the school. And he's like, man, they expel me, man. They do all this stuff to me, man, da, da, da. And he was like, well, they didn't tell you, you know what I'm saying, they didn't tell you to go to class, but they didn't tell you that you didn't have to go to class. And it was kind of like, yo, as long as you're doing what they want you to do, but as soon as you step out of line, they already have that. Well, so we got all this stuff adding up, but we just been letting it go because of your talent.
Yeah. Yeah. And how many times did you see somebody like that in high school?
Shoot, all the time. I was one of those persons.
Yeah. And you just kind of get a pass, man. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's kind of like, we're not going to concern you with things that we know you're doing. Just, again, we talked about on the show before, just stay eligible.
Yep.
Nobody's focusing on, like, the foundation of what it means to be a good person, like, consistently, and to hold yourself accountable first. You know, not and see, a lot of these athletes grow up to where they've never had anybody holding them accountable. And so they get into this situation where there's so many rules. You think about the rules of the NCAA. You think about the rules of the NCAA and how they put all these rules in place. And then you get to the NFL and now you're managing all of this money, all of these responsibilities, all these people. And then the organization wants you to have this standard of living and all of this, but you don't have those skills.
Man, it's so crazy. They try to put little programs in place, right? I think my man, he used to coach in Arizona State, but that whole little tweet type of seminar he would have, you know what I'm saying, it was like, don't hit send. You're thinking like, man, as talented as you guys are, much money as you guys about to have, there's a real lack of maturity amongst you.
Yeah.
They never really develop those skills. So you think about us, right?
Mm-hmm.
Once our talent level started to kind of like, not necessarily like diminish, but like once we started being around the people who were just as talented or more talented, we had to like really reevaluate ourselves. Okay, it's like, okay, I really need to develop these soft skills.
Yes.
I know that this isn't going to, I'm not going to be able to do this and like be able to still get away with the same amount of things.
No. And I'm going to tell you, man, I remember one time my uncle played, and my uncle was a coach and coach D2, then D1, then NBA. And he came and stayed with us one time. And he told my dad that he'd much rather take a recruit, like the guy that was from maybe a low social economical background or one parent household and somebody who struggled, than to basically take somebody like me, who comes from a two parent, you know, middle class, whatever, because he feels like that person is going to be hungry and they're going to do it all. They're going to do everything. Mm-hmm. But you know, when they say, you know, when you hear somebody say that when you're young, you ain't thinking about now, but you think about that now, you like, it makes sense in a way, kind of, not going to lie, does. But then you think about all of these student athletes, especially black males, who get to college and you hear about situations off the court or even on the court. Mm-hmm. And then they go to the NFL or NBA or whatever. And you're like, going back to what my uncle said, that's, you know, yeah, I might not have gave you 30 a game, but I also didn't give you 30 problems either.
Yeah, yeah.
So and it's a fine line.
They don't take into account also, too, like, yo, we were raised with that mentality of, like, yo, you don't have to be from this low social economic background to go all out in everything that you do.
Yeah, say that again.
Like, you don't have to be raised in, like, a low social economic background to have, like, instilled upon you, like, to go all out in everything that you do.
Great point. And I think that's, like, I think, you know how, like, rappers be talking about street cred, and they be, like, talking about how Drake ain't got no street cred, but Drake still be killing the game. Mm-hmm. I think it's the kind of the same thing, like, people think that if you don't come from like the gutter, then you don't have street cred, and that might even translate over to sports. But I'm like, that's why, and this is not knocking anybody who's come from any kind of situation and made it. That's a crazy feat in itself. But I think it just goes back as far as what we're talking about with this show is, you know, situation like AB and others, they get to the league and like they talked about on the Wiley show, it's not a, you're taught never to show vulnerability ever. As an athlete, never back down, never say you're sorry, never do anything that's going to show any sign of weakness. And these guys are making $20 million a year. They don't lose that mentality when you make that kind of money. So you're not going to walk into the president or the GM's office or Robert Kraft's office and say, man, bro, I'm sorry, man. You ain't never said I'm sorry.
And I'm curious to say, like, I wonder, do they call Robert Kraft Rob?
or Mr. Kraft?
Yeah, and it's like, I don't think that they realize they are thinking, okay, I'm this elite athlete, right? This guy, this little 5'5 guy, he might be the owner, but whatever. But I don't think they take into account, like, that guy owns multiple things. Like, this football thing is a drop in the bucket to him. Like, he has multiple businesses that he owns. And I think that's why some of the guys get caught up in the whole, you know, me versus you type of thing, that I should win, I should come out. It's like, yeah, you're never going to really come up over an owner.
No. I mean,
might be a bit of a GM or coach, but
not the owner. Yeah. And to that point, that's a good point. I mean, the guy owns cheese, man. Kraft. Mm-hmm. That's his brand. And so to that, you're right. He's looking like after the game and AB has his antics, for example, he's still going to his crib, which is probably outrageous, and sipping on whatever he's sipping on, smoking a cigar, making business deals. So to like you said, it's a drop in the bucket, man. He don't care. But to the NFL guy, it's everything.
Yeah, and he's probably more so like, you know, when you have that elitist type of talent, right, you're thinking, y'all need me. But to the owner, he's like, oh, football, this, I like it, but this ain't even that serious to me, bro. Like, I'm not dealing with, why am I going to deal with a headache? This might be my favorite one.
Yes, man. I remember, and this is like off the cusp right now. I remember when Cal Korver in the Players Tribune a while ago, he talked about his, basically like his experiences as a white male in America and being an athlete and some of the things that he's noticed throughout his career that his teammates, black teammates, deal with that he's never had to deal with. And I think JJ Redick said something similar, how, because they were talking about this on the Knuckleheads podcast with Quentin Richardson and Miles, Darius Miles, and how, you know, white athletes, they get to the NBA and, for example, they don't have to, like, pay for their mom or dad. They don't have to pay their bills. And so, like, for instance, when most black athletes get to where they make it, they feel like they have to, or they need to repay their mom who sacrificed everything, who worked 2-3 jobs to put their brothers and him or and the athlete through school or just survival. But Kyle Korver and JJ was like, dude, you pay your mom's and dad's bill, you pay your mom's bills. And so it's a whole different, I only say that to say this, it's a whole different mindset once guys, black and brown guys, get to the league. It's like they become the sole, like, provider. when JJ and Kyle Korver made it, they made it and they didn't have to worry about anybody else.
Man, think about Peyton Manning and his brother Eli Manning, the Manning family, right? Archie Manning, they weren't paying, like, their parents didn't need nothing from them.
No.
And you think about, that's why guys who do come from, like, two family households get such a bad rap, as far as, like, think about somebody like Grant Hill, right? Mm-hmm. His mom was Hillary Clinton's college roommate. How guys kind of have that I don't want to say distortion, but like this, that anger a little bit towards them. And guys like Steph Curry, you know, you see them, they're like the Cosbys of the NBA. And so that's why a lot of guys who like, yo, I was like coming from a place where I wasn't eating. And now so to see like just you out here, like this, that's kind of like where it kind of ties into all that as well.
Yeah, I remember, I'm thinking about like Patrick Beverly, how he plays with that chip on his shoulder. And he talks like, you know, his story, he was overseas and I think he got kicked out of college at Arkansas or whatever. And he just plays with this chip on his shoulder. And so I think when he plays against a Steph, that's why that adds that extra. Because I think Jalen Rose even talked about on the 30 for 30 how he hated Duke because they came, most of their guys came from two-parent households. You know, they were straight, basically. And then they get to Duke. And he said, Duke didn't recruit guys like me. So he had that chip on his shoulder. And, you know, not to get too far off track here, but, you know, one thing that I wrote down here is just the education and reassurance of the power you represent and how that's not really there for just, and just forget sports right now, but just in the Black community. And I think that's what, and I know you're doing this with your son, is that at an early age, I'm just trying to get him to understand the power in its, in himself, outside world validating that at all. He doesn't need any validation to tell him that he's great. Like I'm going to tell him that every day. And, you know, but when he messes up, he messes up, I hold him accountable. So, I mean, I think as people, if you're raising your kid only to be an athlete or entertainer or whatever, and you're not instilling that foundation of, man, you're smart, dude. Like you're already powerful. You don't need the outside world to validate you for dunking or throwing a touchdown or throwing a fastball. Like, you dope already. And you think about, like we talked about it, the first, and I had a great household, but the first time I got that love and on the court, when they was like, yo, man, you're good. I was seeking that for the rest of my basketball career. Like that validated who I was. And I was a pretty good student, but, and I was a pretty good human being, but nobody really, other than my mom, they give Patricia Ann, she was pretty much the only one consistently was saying, yo, you're good. You dope anyway. But by then it was like, nah, I need need this love over here.
It's nothing like that. And then too, man, you think about when we, since we're older now, we're parents, you start thinking about like old movie quotes that really start to hit home a little bit, right? And so I think back to that Boys in the Hood, when she's dropping her son off to live with her dad, she's like, I can't teach him how to be no man. And it's like, you really start to see like, dang. You know, I mean, both parents are needed, but it's like, there's certain things that's like, yo, you, it's almost like you got to be there to put your foot in his tail, but to also put your arm around him. Let him know, yeah, you messed up. I still love you.
How do you navigate that, though? I mean, you know, not, and I'm asking you because I know the way we were brought up is, I mean, you got two different stories as far as that goes. So how do you, like, I know I've seen you as a father, and you're a great father. And so how do you go from your experiences to being basically a solid dude and then being a great father, though?
Man, it was more so I had good examples, and when I was around other people, like I said, I have many situations from the Jackson 5, like Berry Gordy type of thing, was like, yo, why can't you be my dad? So, you know, I was fortunate. I had a great high school coach. I had like great older cousin, and a great uncle who would always, I would always be able to see visually what it takes to be a good person or a good father. Now, when you see something like that, you think, oh shit, I could do that, right? Looks easy, looks cool. But then you come up and you have like certain things in your life to where you could easily be like, you know what? Just being a good person thing ain't for me. I'm out. But what helps is like you think, yo, I don't want anyone to have a situation I had growing up. So I'm going to ride this out. I'm going to make the best I can.
Yeah. And I think LeBron James says that too. Like, I think that's what makes him because, you know, his father wasn't there and didn't really show him the way it went around. So he gives all the credit to his mom. But he says that that helps him be a better father because he doesn't want his kids to feel what he felt. And now, mind you, he turned out pretty good, if I do say so myself. But the bottom line is, and they talked about on the Wiley show, the foundation of the issue is too many dudes is making babies and not being fathers. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, LeBron James is the exception, that situation. And you know, not, you know, I know there's other examples out there, not even in sports, where people make it and they come from worse situations or similar situations. But the bottom line is, dog, as a father, being a father now, my extent, you know, my long 3 years, I'm just like, yo, this is my guy. Like, I gotta take care of my guy. This is me. Like, your son looks just like you. My son looks just like me. There's no way I'm walking out on this dude. And at the end of the day, whether he plays sports or not, he's going to be solid. Like, with every bone in my body, he's going to be a good person. Of course, he's going to make mistakes. But at the end of the day, he can't say that I don't ever want him to grow up. And he, let's say he make it to the NBA in the first, like, I ain't at draft. I ain't on draft night. I ain't in Brooklyn with him. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. I think, too, man, when you look at your son and you're like, two things go through your head, right? You're like, yo, how could Kate ever leave? This my guy, right? And then you start thinking, mm-hmm. too, like, man, I don't care if he plays sports. Like, no. I'm not finna, like, be that person that's, like, driving you and having you thinking on doing suicides after your rec league game because you didn't box out. It's kind of one of those things. Like, I know, like, we know, like, how to still be and still a good work ethic regardless of what you do.
Yes. Yeah. I tell my wife all the time, I'm like, because, you know, when I first found him as a boy, you know, the thoughts do, like, oh, my God, going to have an athlete and all that. But like you say, I tell my wife all the time, I'm like, look, or when people ask me, like, is he going to be a ball player like you? Is he going to be tall? I'm like, look, man, I don't really care, to be honest with you. I do want him to have some understanding of sports so we can, when of course, he gets of age or even before then, we can just go out and get some wings and have a legit educational conversation about basketball or football or whatever, just because I do want that the same way I do with my father, have that bond of, you know, it's just a cool thing to do. But even if that doesn't happen, I'm cool with that too, man. Whatever. You know, I just want him to be a good dude.
Just want to make sure, like, you want him to have that, just that team atmosphere, just because, like, working, you're going to have to work in a team all the rest of your life. You're going to have to work with people you don't like.
Yes.
Answer some things that you don't want to answer to, but this is a part of being working in that team environment.
Yeah, and like I wrote down too, man, that feeling of being let down and feeling like you can't trust anyone. I feel like a lot of athletes or just people, man, they grow up and they have like this resentment from just their upbringing, and then that transfers into other parts of their lives where things don't go right. They revert back to, well, I didn't have a father, or I didn't have anything, so I'm not going to make it. And it goes back to that emasculated victim mentality where at some point, man, like, and they talked about it, I don't care where you come from. At the end of the day, you still got a choice to make. Yep. You know, and I know that, like, that might be easy for me to say. People might be like, well, you had it and you're incapable. First of all, everybody got their problems. Everybody got their demons. And I've shared quite a bit of mine on this show. But it's still a choice. I still had a choice to make when I did feel like breaking down and just giving up. But you, something inside of you, and I reverted back to my mother about, ain't no excuses, man. Like, yeah, this is happening, or it happened. You got to keep going. You can't keep blaming. I can't keep blaming my coach for not making it. Or, okay, so what? First of all, that was now 13 years ago.
Yeah.
What have you done in between that?
I teach this freshman seminar course, and, you know, you start going over, like, little rules, expectations of university. You get to a point where you're like, hey, guys, you guys are considered adults now. Mm-hmm. And so there's no more of the excuse of, oh, I didn't know. Like, nah, that's not gonna work, or oh, I wasn't, you know, I didn't get this, or I didn't, da, da, da. Like, nah, man, like that accountability piece, like you are responsible for just if you don't know that classic line, you better ask somebody. It's like it's very true in this day and age. Like, nah, it's no more. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know.
Yeah, but you hear it. I know we talked, we would talk about your class and your students. And I taught a freshman seminar too at my other institution. And yeah, that was the mentality. It was like they always had an excuse for something or felt like they were the victim in any situation. I'm like, no, man, you didn't go to class. You didn't turn that assignment in. Okay, yeah, you might have slept in, but why'd you sleep in? Did you stay out all night? So it always comes back to the person.
Got a classic example of this whole do you need a healing emasculated victim. I had a student, they did presentations, right? They were terrible. And I said, you know what, we're gonna scratch this, we're coming back on Wednesday, we're gonna do it again. It's almost like getting kicked out of practice. We come back, we start this over. Get to the next day for the presentation and somebody says, oh man, got this, I got locked out my room, I got this going on, I can't get there. And I looked and I just said, okay. I mean, are you're mad at me because we're still continuing on? And I'm like, and I think to myself, like, in actuality, if you would have taken this preparation initially for the first presentation, we probably wouldn't even have class today. And so don't get mad at me now because it's the 19th hour. Just about to come up short.
Yeah, they looking at you like Mr. Johnson, like really, is it that serious? And you want to be like, yeah, it is that serious, because I know what life is, I know what's about to happen to you, I do, because I lived it. But they don't see it like that. When you're young, when they're young, these kids looking at you, we were just talking about it pre-show, we talk about it, they look at you like, I mean, you went to college just to work at a college. Yeah. And you're looking like, keep living, my friend. Keep living. Like, yeah, I know you might not have seen, this ain't the sexy job. I know I ain't on TV. I know. But keep living. I know.
I know I'm not in the studio. You know? I've been thinking back to an old quote, man. Family said, all you gotta do is live long enough, sir.
That's all you gotta do. Life is funny. And they got their whole world ahead of them, man. But I worry about the next generation or even our kids, like. Like, where are we headed, man? Like, if everybody has a sense of entitlement, if everybody has been given a trophy, even when they haven't deserved a trophy, and nobody has a work ethic, everybody seems to be lazy. You know, as a country, we're dealing with this whole obesity thing, and we're so behind on other countries as far as education is concerned. The value of education is, like, where are we headed? Like, and if we're going to play the victim game, what are we doing at the end of the day?
If we're gonna play the victim game, we're finna get blamed a whole lot.
I'm telling you. And truth be told, man, these kids got it made. The problem though is, like we said, parents ain't being parents, but fathers ain't being fathers. But even, you know, you don't want to put it all on fathers, but it's just that sense of community. And that those sense of you're really installing, like we talked about in the beginning of the show, installing the foundation, that solid foundation in individuals, period, especially athletes, is just not there because they got a talent. And so by the time they get older and you wonder why they weren't successful on the court or in the field, and they went broke, or, you know, it's because the foundation wasn't there. You can build a $1 million home, but if the foundation is $5, $200, $1,000, it's going to crumble. So you got to start early, man. And being a parent is hard, but it's worth it. I mean, my mom made a lot of sacrifice, but I like to think I'm a solid dude. My dad, too. I'm a solid guy. And I know it's worth it. I know what I wasn't the most easiest person to deal with, but still.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Definitely.
One thing we wanted to kind of touch on too was, you know, kind of, I guess, well, I got down here the Myles Garrett thing, man, and I know this is still fresh and this is kind of touchy, and you know, for those out there, the Myles Garrett plays for the Browns. He's a freaking beast, by the way. I watched his Instagram videos. He's a monster. But anyway, he hit Buddy with the helmet. Game was over. You know, he tackled the quarterback. The quarterback was on the ground with him. Quarterback tried to take Myles Garrett's helmet off, and Myles Garrett took Buddy's helmet off and hit him with it, right? We all know the story by now. We should. And then it comes out that, you know, he's going to be suspended indefinitely. He comes out to appeal and says that Buddy, the white guy, called him and made a racial slur, right? And, of course, the quarterback, the white guy, says, no, I did not. That he even says that. Well, and I know we talked about it pre-show, man. It kind of ties into and guess what? We'll never really know if the guy said anything. But here's my point. Whether he said something or not, you still don't, and I know in that moment, I think we somewhat disagree on this, and that's great. That makes for a great show. But I'm just like, in the heat of the moment, we all been there. Like, you use that analogy where you're practicing, somebody's just hitting you for no reason, and you just see red, like you're competitive and all of that. But to lose your cool in that situation like that, end of the game, and you know your value to your team, and you know your value as a player, and you putting your money on the line, I don't know. I don't know about that.
I'm thinking taking that same account, and it's like the series beforehand, you probably have moments to like process and be like, you know what? I'm not, the game's wrapped up. I'm not finna go hard these last two plays. I'm about to just chill. And I think just in the moment that you're going and it's happening, I don't think he could have said anything to him. And it's just in that heat of that moment, like, you're not thinking, oh man, I'm gonna miss some game checks. You're just thinking, like, you're already seeing red because football is a heightened, you have to see red, right? And so you're not thinking about your game check. You're thinking, like, yo, I want to kill this dude.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, and I'm gonna give you an example. You remember we were playing pickup a few years ago, and there was this bozo that was guarding you. He was this doofy dude, had a full game uniform at a rec gym, right? And he's just doing all this dumb stuff. And I looked into your eyes, and I was like, yo, just chill, man. It's not very serious. Dog, you guys were probably like 30 seconds away from being locked up. And I know for a fact you were thinking, I work at a prestigious university. I'm not gonna blow this because guys giving me foul of me hard. You were like, yo, if this dude touches me one more time, I'm putting his head through the bleachers.
Okay, touche, my friend. Touche. I do recall that situation, and in that very moment, well, first of all, to give the listeners some context, this dude was a big bozo. And he was fouling me I wasn't even close to the rim. He was just chopping me down for no reason. And he kept doing it, okay? Not trying to make, see, and now I'm playing the victim. See, you see how they switched up? But so I do have to agree with you that in the heat of the moment, I mean, I did see, I wasn't thinking about being a father. I wasn't thinking about jail. I was just thinking about this dude. And we were on a military base. So you're right. Yeah. I would have been locked up. And so I do get it. I know, even though I'm sitting here playing the victim right now, my thing is with Myles Garrett is that it was, first of all, great example. Great example. But he's on national TV. He's making millions of dollars. And I know money doesn't really change the situation. And the same thing that makes him great, he's a beast, all of that. But to say... Because he should have just, like, if I would have got fined, if I would have got locked up, I would have been like, yo, that's my bet. That I blew it. He's trying to blame Buddy for saying something out of whack. And who knows if he did. But if he did, you're still trying to club, dude, when billions of people watch it. I know in the moment, though. I know.
I think he's just trying to save face. I think that dude couldn't have said, he could have said, please. He could have been like, I'm sorry. But the fact that they were just, if you watch it, man, it happens so fast where people, like, they keep playing in slow motion. So it seems like that was over, like, the whole brawl was like 30 minutes. That joint was probably 5 to 8 seconds. And it was just like and mind you, Myles Garrett, it was just him, and it was like three other Steelers guys, right? And so you're not really, I don't even know. He probably didn't think he was gonna get a clean shot off, but he was just gonna squeeze the swing in that helmet. I'm aiming for you, but I don't even know if I'm gonna get you because I got these two other 6'5" dudes grabbing on me, pushing me back.
And Buddy better be glad it wasn't a real clean hit, because he might, I mean, shoot, he could have been hurt for real.
That could have ended his career.
Yeah, and dude, they were saying dude already had concussions and whatnot before, and so, but anyway, I'm sitting here thinking about that day at the gym, man. You're right, man. That's a good example. I think I just need to end it at that. I don't even know what to say to that. So, because I definitely was seeing red. Forget everything else in that very moment.
That's head to the bleachers.
Oh, that dude was a bozo, man. But anyway, and that was, I guess, that was the example for me. But what's a good example of, like, for you when you might have blamed others, though, like, for your mishaps? I mean, I know we talked about your father, but are there any other situations as it relates to sports or anything else?
Man, I think, man, honestly, man, it was probably like my high school coach. Like, and mind you, when I say like my high school coach, anyone knows like our high school coach, John Baker. You probably spend more time around him than you would like as far as with practice. You would just spend more time just like in his office, like talking with him, and he's like giving you scenarios, or y'all talking about just the day of scenarios, and he's breaking down like, yo. This is what happened. This is what you did wrong. You can't expect da da da, and you doing this, and it was like a multitude of those things. Like if you ask anyone, man, I'll probably spend like hours in his office. We're talking just about a little situation that might have happened throughout the day. Like I think this one time, man, my teacher, I had a homeroom teacher who used to just like try to push my buttons, right? And he had a genuine like interest for me, wanted me to be successful, but he just always wanted to push me, and he knew how to push my buttons. So one time, man, he's saying something to me, and I'm leaving out of class, the bell rings, and I hear him talking to me, and he's down the hall, and I have my back turned towards him. I was like, man, would you just leave me the F alone? When I tell you, he made a beeline for me. He was like, what was that? What was that? And he was acting like I had just been all in his face, cussing him out, doing all this other stuff, goes and tells my coach I get suspended from school for that. My
What?
coach, and I'm looking at my coach like, are y'all really serious right now? And he was like, you can't cuss the man out. And I was like, really? That's what we're calling that, cussing someone out? And it was just a matter of like, no matter what happens, people are gonna try you, but you always gotta like, you can't let them get the best of you, and like, you can't react in those certain moments because they painted a picture like I was just like this aggressive student who was cussing the teacher out, and I was looking like, that's what we're doing. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was
Yeah.
kind of one of those things that just really made me like, it had one of those like Forrest Whitaker moments, like, you can't cuss at the teacher.
Yeah. Yeah. I never knew you guys suspended from school, man. You was an ISS, weren't you?
They suspended me for one day.
What good was that? What'd you do that day?
Man, it caused a whole other whirlwind in my life that they didn't even know about. I was just like, yo, y'all have no idea what you guys just did.
Was your dad pissed or
Man,
something?
dad was pissed, my aunt, my uncle was pissed, everybody was looking at me like I'm this felon now. I'm gonna go into prison, they're gonna send me on a chain gang, and oh my God, he's not gonna make it. And I was just like, yo, are y'all serious right now? You would have thought that I was on the 5 o'clock news, like, student in a Southeast Raleigh high school today. I don't. It was so bad. I was like, yo, man. All right, I see it. I see what we're
Hey, but you never got suspended
now.
again,
Never
did
got suspended again. Never got an ounce of trouble again.
you? Yep. And see, I think that's the difference too, man. Even if it's tough as your dad not being there, but when he was there, he was still a figure. One thing they talked about on the show too, man, was the guy made a quote. He said, "The more success an athlete has, the further they move away from the people they can relate to and understand." And I think that's so true. That was such a profound statement, man, that made me think about how guys that come from these low socioeconomical backgrounds and then they get all this money. And we all know what comes with money is a lot of love, a lot of people who may not necessarily have their best interests. And then they actually become their own incorporation, their own business. And nobody really looks like them. And then that's why you see so many guys bring their posse with them, because that's what makes them feel comfortable. And I just, again, man, I think that we and as fathers need to do a better job raising our kids and raising and being a staple in our communities, to where we're having, you know, discussions with our kids and even people in the community about our lived experiences. And just from, you know, I just think the whole curriculum in K-12 needs to be wiped away and like make it more real for students, because, you know, I don't know exactly what they're teaching in K-12 anymore, but I know they're not teaching a lot about financial literacy. I do know that, or emotional intelligence per se, things that really matter, like self-awareness, transitional skills, things that we know no matter where the world goes technology-wise, they need to have. And we just got to do a better job of that.
I think, man, too, like you just said, the more success you have, right, you more start moving away from people that relate to you, understand you. And I look at it now, man, I feel like this is why we're in great positions. So I teach that freshman class, and I got these two guys, and one of them is from VA. One of them's from, like, the real low socioeconomic background in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. He was, I don't want to say the valedictorian of his high school, but really, really smart, like a 3A GPA. Just one of those guys to where I look at him and I feel like Uncle Jeff, and I give him that quote, like, man, you got a real shot, man. You got a real shot. You can make it. And that's kind of where I feel like we can have a biggest impact on, like, our community, because I talked to those two dudes and I'm like, okay, how was y'all fall break, man? Y'all went back home. And I was like, y'all started seeing people that didn't really go to school and what they were up to. And you can see the look in their eyes of like, yeah, man, it was bad. And because don't get me wrong, they're not like the perfect student, because you start seeing little things in them to where it's like, they look like they might get sidetracked. And you're like, oh, keep your eyes on the prize. Like, yes. Keep your mind on the books.
Yes.
And just to have that little inkling of like, hey, man, I know this isn't really fun right now, but don't do anything that's going to make you work back home at that gas station.
Yes, and that's such a good example too, man. You're right, we are in great positions, but I think too, and I think about it all the time, about how it is just a blessing, how grateful I am to be in this, like, a real position of influence, right? But I think our lived experiences, I know for me, man, I had to do a lot of unpacking just from the situations of that I've shared on this podcast and, you know, personally. And to unpack all of that, it's still unpacking. But I think it's important that to acknowledge that you do need to be healed. Like, I needed a healing, like, you know, and I'm fortunately in my life, friendships and, you know, my wife and my mom and brother and people to help me heal and reassure me that what happened does not define you. Right. And I can move on, but it's more of a mental thing, and it's still a challenge. And I know the guy on the show, Wiley, was talking about how he goes to counseling once a week to deal with some of the things he saw. I mean, I think he's from California, and some things he saw about his gang neighborhood that he lived in, and how he saw gang and violence, and how he, you know, didn't have his father and all of this. And I think that's the first step as a man or person, is to acknowledge that you need to be healed. And I know we're supposed to be tough. I know we're not supposed to show any vulnerability, but I think that's the ultimate sign of strength, is when you can say, man, I was hurt, man. I'm still hurting from that. Like, I need help.
Man, you called me on my name like that.
Yeah. Like, and I know we talked pre-show too about that example of that young lady, man. I think you need to share that.
Man, so you know, we go through all examples about, like, you know, you have to take accountability, but at the same time, man, some of that stuff that you're going through, that really happens. And it's like, for example, there was this lady, Mary King. So, you know, she was a great Olympic distance runner, and she was just kind of came out now as far as, like, you know, abuse of her time at Nike, the Oregon Project Track Club, and the coach, Alberto Salazar. I might pronounce that wrong, but, you know, she was just going through a lot, like, as far as there's, like, a systemic crisis in women's sports and at Nike, right? Basically saying, like, just the amount of verbal abuse that she took, and she was basically forced to, like, take, like, birth control to keep her weight down. Just a whole lot of different things that was going on. And basically, man, she kind of, like, you know, had to leave the sport. It was just as far as, like, couldn't really, those that mentality of just, like, that abuse, and it took a toll on her as far as, like, you know, PTSD. And now she's saying, like, kind of like the same thing, you know, with our podcast, like, once she started sharing her story, she just, not only did she start to come in with, like, how much more this is needed, but, like, how much she started to heal, like, as far as, like, getting it out there, people listening, and, like, that part. And, like, all of her accomplishments, right, it's almost like, yeah, that was cool, but this right here is what I really needed to just get healing, to somebody to know my story, somebody to know what's going on, and to now go, and now let's fix this.
Yes, and her story is not unique, people. I mean, that is a that it, there's probably a lot of uniqueness to her story, but her story, especially for athletes, student athletes, is not unique, man. I mean, and we've said it on this show. I saw something on Real Sports years ago when they said that being an athlete, a student athlete, was at the top of the list as far as being one of the most being the most stressful environment or workplace. And it's because of that verbal abuse, the high intensity, the high levels of stressors, and what everything that's on the line. And so if you got a coach, you know, we talked about the Rutgers coach back in the day when he was throwing the balls at people and using all this crazy language. That was the only reason we know about that is because that was filmed. We saw that. That was captured. That happens quite a bit. And these student athletes, guess what we do? We take that because at the time, they got that carrot in front of us, which is our scholarship, and it's our hopes and dreams. But guess what? We get older, and that stuff, I'm telling you, man, unpacking all of that is such a self, like, just moving on from that and really looking at yourself like, I'm so much better than that. I'm so, like, I'm not just that. I'm not who that coach or who that person said I was. I'm able and I'm strong enough to move on. But the first step, to her point, like, this has been therapeutic for us to get on wax and talk about our stuff. And for her, I commend her on sharing her story and surviving that, because a lot of people don't, man. They revert to alcohol, drugs, and just have this spiral down and you know, play the victim game. And they never get out of it.
So remember when I was like, you know, her biggest thing now, as far as being feeling that breath of fresh air, is like getting the story out there. I think for us, man, I know, like, I've had some great moments as an athlete, right? But I think for me, there would be no better feeling, right, for us to, like, walk into a space and to see one of those people that, like, said all these things about us, like, as far as, like, you know what, y'all ain't gonna do nothing. You ain't gonna be ish. And then for them to see us in this space, I'm like, oh, dang, y'all didn't really live out that hoop dream life, as far as like just constantly trying to just hoop and just, you know, you look like you wear sweatpants for a living. Like, I would, that moment is like me scoring a game winner.
Yeah, and I tell you what, man, they don't have to run into us. They doing it now. They hearing us. They seeing us. Thank God for social media. And I'm not, to be honest with you, I ain't doing it for them, but I know the people that I would say, quote unquote, or whatever you want to say, hurt me the most are paying attention. And I think the best thing we can do is just keep trying to be the best people we can be and helping those that you know, are going through the good fight right now, or went through the fight and giving them some type of hope. And, you know, I ain't saying we the people's champ, but, you know, we are representative of some people who kind of came out clean on the other side, as my man Andy Dufresne said. I'll say, you know, and it's, but it was, it's like we said, we still doing it. It ain't like it's over. So, you know, I know we want to close out. What you got down
there? Oh man, so just that whole part where it was like, you know how we saying now, like, you know, we're getting older and we're seeing all these like old, think about old movie clips that really resonate today. And so with the whole, you know, master victim mentality type of thing, not coming up with father. You think back to the movie Friday, right? So rest in peace, John Witherspoon. But that moment where he's all like, man, you think you're a man with that gun? He's like, man, I'm a man without it. And just that scene of like, yo, man, you win some, you lose some, but you live to fight another day. And we be thinking about that. Like, we in the moment, we're like, ah, you know, whatever. But now you think, like, some people don't have that person to stop them from going out that door with that gun.
Yes.
And then, boom, their life is just over. Think about it. Because you just think about the shootings and all stuff that's happening. There's no one there to stop them from taking that gun out that door.
Yes, man. That's such a great point.
Because in Durham right now, man, there's been, like, they had, like, I want to say 8 or 9 days straight where they were shooting every day.
Boom, boom, I read boom. About it. Yeah, and nobody's there to stop them. And really, his other point to that was that, excuse my language, so afraid to take an ass whooping.
Mm-hmm.
that's the other part of the quote, that people are so afraid. There's this fear of failure and rejection. I did a seminar last week, and one of the things that came out, students, this guy said, like verbally, he was just like, you know, I'm applying to grad school, but I have this fear of rejection. I'm like, wait, stop, wait a minute. I said, why? And I told him, I said, you don't have to tell why. I said, I'll tell you why you got fear of rejection. I said, because you never had to walk across the cafeteria to talk to the girl.
Mm-hmm.
And they all started laughing. I said, y'all know what that feels like when you're in the cab or you're in the space and all your friends are telling you to go over there and talk to, you know, you're like, nah, I ain't going. And they're like, man, go. And they finally talk you up to it and you do it and you go over there. And she says, boy, get out my face. And everybody starts laughing. I said, that's why you're afraid of rejection. I said, we had to do that. And so by the time you get to high school, college, and real life, you done heard no so much. It's like, whatever. But guess what? All you need is a one yes. That's all it takes. We ain't no sliding in no DMs. We ain't had that. We had to deal with rejection. I said, but that, and not to get too far off, but that is the foundation of why people are not reaching their goals. They don't even take the steps to do it. And we talk about it offline, how these young people have this nonchalant, I don't care kind of mentality. They have no feeling. They have no emotion. It's because that's safer than to actually challenge themselves to do something. Nobody wants to be uncomfortable. But that is where, not to sound like an after-school commercial, but that is where the true growth happens. The minute you can feel comfortable, like Steve Harvey says, he's like, yo, at some point, you're going to have to jump, yo. Like, regardless. Like, at some point, you got to jump. And guess what? That parachute might not open the first time, the second time, the third time, but you still got to jump. You got to take the risk and deal with all of that emotion. The quicker and the more consistently we can do that, the better off, because what will happen is, just like shooting that jumper, you are a great shooter. You want a great shooter the first time you went to the gym. That took repetition. That took time. It took you years to get that left sweet little step back, kick your leg out, boom, off balance, right? It's the same thing, but kids and young and even adults, man, they rather play the victim. I didn't have this, or I don't do this, or nobody was there for me, or even nobody's there for me now. We got to stop with that mentality. I don't care what your situation or circumstances are. And like you say, man, like, you win some, you lose some. Just, you got to, but you got to fight. You got, I mean, hey, I done got beat up a few times, but I won a couple, and it's okay. You know,
it's
you
okay did. To strike out, man. Just
stay a couple What movie? What movie was that?
Hall Pass.
Hall Pass, yeah, man. So look, we. That's a classic movie too. But look, man, we want to end the show. You got anything else?
Nah, man, I'm good.
All right, cool. Like we always say, the highest human act is to inspire. Rest in peace, Nip. And you all continue to support us. Follow us on Instagram at Cape and Drew Podcast. If you got any questions, you can email us at capeanddrewpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us or go to our website, capeanddrew.com. And, you know, we'll catch y'all next time. I'm Cape.
I'm Drew.
Catch y'all.